This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. No one has a crystal ball to predict the future, but over the years, we've checked in with Jim Dater, Professor Emeritus at the University of Hawaii's Research Center for Futurist Studies. We thought this was a good time to circle back, given the upheaval of our global economy. He was believed to be the first one in Hawaii to get a glimpse into how computer technology would change our lives, and that was like 50 years ago. He was part of a chorus calling to diversify our economy since we are so dependent on tourism. We talked to him yesterday afternoon about navigating through this COVID crisis.
Talking about tourism now is very frustrating because we have said many, many times, everybody agrees, it's a great industry, but it's a very fragile industry, extremely fragile industry, and we need to base our economy on something else instead. And, of course, the present moment of the virus and the economic shutdown is, I hope, being taken as an opportunity for rethinking what we do everywhere in the world, especially here in Hawaii.
I guess I think of seize the day, you know, it
yes,
is an opportunity.
Seize the day indeed. Seize the future.
So we are hearing from residents across the state that because we have so few tourists now, that it's a chance to figure out what our carrying capacity is and how to move forward.
Well, I think so, but it, indeed it's more than that. One of the things that has not been a up and front part of the discussion about what Hawaii or every other place will be like after the crisis passed is sea level rise, climate change, the fragility of the economic system, which has simply made more and more people poorer and poorer and fewer extremely rich. It wasn't exactly a robust, wonderful system working for everybody, and we might have had very low unemployment here in Hawaii, but a lot of the most people, many people, had to work two, three, or four jobs to survive. So it's not as though we're returning to an ideal state. We have to use this crisis as an opportunity of thinking about something much better.
And because we've had to rely on technology during this time, whether it's distance learning or Zoom meetings, the technology is a key player in this.
I agree. Again, I have long been an advocate of moving towards distance education and was one of the first to go online with classes or to include a chat aspect to my live courses and so forth. And it's always seemed to me that of all places in the world, Hawaii should be a leader in tele-everything because of the fact that we are isolated from the rest of the world, and also the islands are physically separated from each other in ways that cry out for electronic governance and electronic everything else. So I hope that people's experience with electronics now as a replacement for traveling somewhere and talking to people has been positive, or at least positive enough, they're willing to think about that as playing a more intimate part in the future.
So while you were maybe one of the early adapters or early adopters?
I was. I was on something sponsored by the National Science Foundation that enabled me to be the first civilian, not the first person, that would have been somebody in the U.S. military, but the first civilian, the first person at the University of Hawaii to be on what was called computer conferencing back then. And I suddenly was getting information from around the world that none of my colleagues got because they were still relying on books floating across in boats for information and so forth. For a short period of time, I looked like a real futurist. I knew things that other people didn't know because of that experience.
Do you remember what year that was?
It was in the 70s.
Like I said, you were in the forefront, and maybe there were many professors who weren't ready to embrace this concept, but were forced to.
Well, it wasn't so much the professors, although that's the case, but you might be surprised to know how many students would drop my courses, but I told them they were going to have to be in a chat situation as well. They didn't know, they were afraid of the technology, they didn't know how to use it, but let me tell you that once students began to engage in discussion among themselves, I lost all fantasies about my role as a teacher and about what education was actually going on. I was just one of the guys trying to get a word in edgewise as they were discussing things among themselves. I discovered things about what they thought about what I was saying that I had never known before.
And now we have whole generations of people who are brought up in this technology with operating systems and digital this and digital that, just
right.
changing
and
so quickly.
Right, and they can't imagine, and I hope they don't have to imagine, a world without it. So I really hope that folks at the University of Hawaii now are taking advantage of this, and they ought to with their president, because David Lasner was head of the computing center as his original job at the university, and he and I talked a lot about the fact that the wave of the future should be towards electronic education and not simply bricks and mortar.
You just recently wrote something up for the South Korean government and the media there, and it's kind of caught fire. Talk about that.
Well, yeah. You never know what's going to work and what isn't going to work, but a PowerPoint presentation that I did over Zoom for the Institute for Strategic Security somehow got picked up by somebody in the press, and I literally am every day asked to do something new. I just discovered that Wired magazine is opening a Korean language version, and they have asked me to contribute to the first issue of that Wired Korea. I am happy to do this because I was one of the first subscribers to the old English language Wired when it was a very futures-oriented magazine. I still subscribe to it. Anybody who has ever heard me yammer about the future knows that I always say you cannot predict the future, but you can forecast alternative futures and then strive towards preferred futures. And basically, I believe all of the different images of the future fall into one of four categories. So whenever I'm asked to talk about the future of anything, I have one future that is more or less a continuation of the present. There's a lot of change, but it's still based upon what's happening now. Another based upon collapse, and of course that's sort of what we're in now, are facing the possibility of an economic and social collapse because of our response to the coronavirus. And then the third is called a discipline society, which means instead of pursuing endless economic growth, we have other values based upon other things, perhaps religious, perhaps cultural, whatever other values other than economic growth there are. And then there are some people, this used to be the stock and trade of futurists, of transformation, that the technology that we were just talking about really is transforming us as individuals, and we have transformed what was once a garden, once a wilderness, into a garden, and now it's uncertain what the future of our planet, the biosphere, will be. So we're in a period of transformation, people. So basically what I said is, at this point, we don't know, no one knows, what the future of the coronavirus itself is, when, if ever, it will end, whether there will be immunity to it, either through herd behavior or through vaccines, or whether this is going to be like the common cold, something that reappears year after year, but with somewhat more severity than the cold. You know, one of the things about Korea, even though I lived many years in Japan and worked in Japan for quite a long time before I came to Hawaii, the last 10 or 15 years, I've been asked over and over to do things in Korea where they have just become tremendously futures-oriented. That's based upon that's why they have been able to move from being one of the poorest nations on the face of the earth in the mid-50s at the end of the Korean War to one of the richest nations now by following a model of economic development. But they also know that that is perhaps at an end, or at least I'm working with them and understanding they can't be followers anymore. They need to become what is very difficult, they tell me, very difficult for them to do, to become innovators and leaders. And if they could, they still have functioning governments that the citizens more or less trust. They have extremely intelligent people. Let's use that for creativity and not just for improving what other people have done.
Okay, so while South Korea may be warming to that idea, why can't we do that here in Hawaii?
Well, what a great question. If there's ever any other place in the world that needs to take this opportunity to do the same thing, we have an excellent educational system in spite of all the complaints. I think that our higher education facilities have produced great people. I think we ought to encourage them now to be creative in using this opportunity to be creative about the future of Hawaii itself. When I first came to Hawaii back in 1969, Governor Burns and the political, economic, educational leaders of Hawaii planned something called Hawaii 2000, a huge citizen-based activity of imagining what they wanted Hawaii to be like in the year 2000 from the year 1970. I think we ought to take this crisis as an opportunity to do the same thing now, to have us rethink what we want the future of Hawaii to be beyond what it was before.
All right, carpe diem, seize the day.
That's it.
2020, we need the clarity as we navigate forward.
Right.
All right, well, Jim Dator, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, thank you very much.
That was Jim Dator, Professor Emeritus of the Future Studies Research Center at UH Manoa.